Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, January 18th, 2016. And with me today, I have the ever cuddleable Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Just pulled out my headphone jacks, but I think you're introducing me. And I will say good morning.
Your response was absolutely perfect, Brian. No one is going to know that that you couldn't hear me.
Excellent.
Yeah. And also John Martellaro, I bet you can hear me, John.
Say what?
Yeah. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you.
Awesome. It's great to have both of you here today. And I thought we could start today John, how about if we kind of dissect what you were saying on Friday? And so for listeners, what John did on Friday was he posited his – do you want me to call it a hypothesis or theory, John?
Either one. Theory sounds good.
Okay. So John posited a theory on Friday that Apple – created the Swift programming language, at least in part, with the Apple Car in mind. And John, you presented some good arguments as to why that would be. But now that we've gone through the weekend, you've kind of shifted positions a little bit. And I'm curious why.
Well, no, I haven't shifted my position. I just think that the theory may not be sustainable. Some very astute readers provided some feedback. What got me started thinking about it was that Swift came along just in time, it seemed. The prospect of doing an autonomous car and writing a million lines of Java code or Objective-C code probably is sobering. So the timing was of interest to me. I recently did an interview with Dr. Rob Wiltbank of Galah in Portland, Oregon, whose specialty is writing secure software. And when we did the interview, we focused on the fact that Swift has many of the design elements of a programming language called Haskell, which makes it very difficult for the programmer to implement ambiguous thinking in the code. So the programmer is virtually required to state explicitly exactly what's intended, and ambiguities always result in security issues. So there was that. And then I noticed that, or reminded myself that there's a Mr. Bell on the Apple board of directors who came from Boeing. And then I started thinking about the evolution of jet fighters, how, you know, in the 50s and 60s, the jet fighters were just a piece of shiny aluminum with a jet engine attached and some analog instruments and a cannon. And we evolved to the F-35 with 6 million lines of codes debug. And then I started reading an article about Consumer Electronics Show and about autonomous cars coming along with many, many, many lines of code. And they mentioned that a current 2015 Ford F-150 truck already has 150,000 lines of code just right now, today. So I thought, you know, it's probably not unrealistic for an Apple car to have a million or more lines of code implementing the artificial intelligence, you know, GPS tracking, recognizing the road, making decisions, handshaking with other cars, making anti-collision decisions, and all of the things that an autonomous car does.
All right. So far, I'm with you.
I sat there writing particle debris, and I said, you know, it seems to me like the timing couldn't have been better for Apple to switch away from the limitations of Objective-C and come up with a new language. And with robots on the horizon and especially autonomous cars on the horizon, it would be nice to have a language that Apple could live with for the next 20 years. And so I presented a theory for the entertainment of the readers and myself, with tasty evidence that maybe Apple developed the Swift programming language to support its artificial intelligence work and for an autonomous car. So readers had some variety of opinions about that, and the jackpot response came from a wonderful, gracious reader, Brylor, who pointed out some history of the development of Swift when it first started, and made a rational case for the fact that Apple probably wasn't thinking about an autonomous car in 2010 when Swift was being developed. So theories are made to be tested. I think it was worth exploring, and perhaps there's enough evidence now to suggest that it was a coincidence.
All right, so now I'm curious, because you're very intelligent, very analytical, and if someone was able to present an argument to you that that says the theory that you had posited probably isn't correct, what is it about the argument that you presented that got you to change your mind?
Well, the reader who goes under the screen name Brylor pointed out that Swift had been developed way back in 2010 by Dr. Chris Lattner. And it's reasonable that Apple probably didn't have an autonomous car on the drawing board in 2010. So while it's not ironclad, and while Apple may have been thinking way ahead, his suggestion that the timing issue is probably not quite right seemed to me like perhaps it tested the theory to its limits, and I don't think it's worth pursuing as a result.
So I think I can probably summarize this in one succinct sentence.
Oh, please do, Brian.
Oh, please, Brian. Well, you know, Linus Pauling, who's a Nobel Prize winner from Indiana University, once said the best way to have a good idea is to have lots of ideas. And when I get lots of ideas, I think that's good. And I entertain myself and the readers with them.
I'm going to have to come to your defense, too, because while Apple may not specifically have had an autonomous vehicle on its mind in 2010, might not have been one on the drawing board, the reality is that Apple could very well have had a framework in mind that included a wide array of things.
Sure.
Including, because you can look at an autonomous vehicle and you can actually just sort of pare that down to artificial intelligence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that is something that plays into that plays into an Apple car, and Apple could well have thought, we really should be paying attention to this or that or these areas as we look into the future and look to expand beyond iPhones.
Exactly. They have these meetings and they say, well, look, Objective-C is, 20 years old? It's long of tooth. Is Objective-C the language we want to go forward for the next 20 years with, or do we need to get more modern and have a language that can take us into the future for all the projects that we have in mind on the drawing board? Yeah.
So, Brian, what you were saying, just to make sure I've got it right, is that Apple may not have had a car in mind when they...
That doesn't mean that John's wrong.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that John's wrong. Yeah. They may not have had a car in mind, but they were thinking about the types of technologies that they would need that would be in a car, but they could be in other things as well. And it just happens to work out that sure enough, Swift is much better for Apple for developing code for a car than Objective-C.
Yeah. That could be. I'm not saying that it is, because I don't know. None of the three of us know, but it certainly could be.
Yeah, I'll buy it.
And it got a great discussion going.
You got a great discussion going, yeah.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Other than the slams on the F-104 itself, which were off track.
We're going to have a link to the show notes.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I'm sorry, we're going to have a link to that in the show notes. There we go. Use my words. You big boy.
I'm so proud of you, Brian. You had all the words, and on your second try, you had them in the right order.
That's right. I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yay, Brian. Yay. Cool. All right, listeners, I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes, like I always do. And you can check out John's piece. And if you have ideas about whether or not you think John was right or not, let me know. Just to add your comments to the show notes, because there's already, or excuse me, to the article that will be linked in the show notes, because there's already a really great discussion happening there.
Maybe not right or wrong, or maybe on to something.
All right, I'll accept that. Do you think John's on the right path, or so very, very not? Yeah, but let me know. All right, now the other thing that I wanted to take a look at today is a piece that I found this morning, and I want your opinions, because when I started reading it, it just struck me as really kind of different, because I couldn't decide at first if this woman was justified in being really upset at Apple or not. So here's the background. I found this article on CBC News about this woman whose husband died.
It's Canadian Broadcast Corporation.
Thank you. Yes. So her husband passes away, and she's been using their iPad to play this video game that she really, really likes. And at some point, she has to reinstall the game. And when she goes to do that, she needs to enter the password for his Apple ID, because the account was his. She doesn't know this password. So she contacts Apple and says, hey, just give me the password so I can reinstall my game. And Apple says, nope. And that's the very short version of it. And there's other details along the way, like Apple told her at one point, oh yeah, you know, with a death certificate, we can make something happen. But then ultimately they said, actually, you know what we really need to be able to get you a password for that Apple ID is a court order. And she flipped out and thought it was absolutely ridiculous that Apple would not just hand over the password for her deceased husband's Apple ID. And in the end, Apple is now working with her to get it resolved. But I'm curious, what do you guys think?
Well, I'm not so much interested in her response, which is natural, and I'm not so much interested in the process that Apple has to put her through, because with today's threats and phishing and people spoofing and stealing identity, it's reasonable for Apple to go through a formal process to make sure that she is who she says she is and she is authorized to have his password. What interests me is that there's a Internet Technologies Administration issue that I've been beating about for the last couple years, and that is you have an infrastructure in your household, you have passwords, you have backups, and it's sensible to create a flash drive with an encrypted DMG on it that you give to your spouse or whoever is the IT administrator of the family, creates this tool, and it's made known to the family, and there's a familiar and well-understood password to this encrypted DMG that opens the doors in the case when a family member has to be in the hospital for an extended period of time or passes away, or there's some other issue.
Nothing could go wrong with that.
Well, I mean, it's a sensible thing to do.
Well, but it's no, it's not, because I'll give you complete counters to that. Someone with access to that well-understood and well-known password uses it to break in and steal the guy's online gambling account.
Well, I'm talking about having a spouse who knows this password, so that if one of the spouses passes away or is in the hospital for a while, and the other spouse has to pay bills or do something or access Amazon or whatever they need to do, they have access to the information they need. And it's a simple matter of home administration and modern, you know, IT management and technical households. It's, And that's the first thing I thought of when I heard about this story, because it's benign neglect to say, well, okay, I'm not going to tell my wife anything. And then when I pass away, she has to figure out what my Apple ID was. I mean, you know, that's just careless.
It's also really common. The number of people that don't ever think about how someone else might need to have passwords or combinations to safes or keys to safe deposit box, whatever. The number of people that never think about these things is shockingly high, and it's going to bite you in the butt at some point. Now, I was torn with this because I felt bad that she wasn't able to easily get at the password for this Apple ID. But on the other hand, I was really glad that Apple didn't make it easy, because at that point, then you just social engineer your way into their account.
I'm right there with you.
But it's not just social engineering. So the first thing that Apple asked for was to speak to the mother, to get a to get a copy of the will and to get a copy of the death certificate. And the family that was helping this woman do all this got all that information together and called back. And then they ran through a problem where apparently there was no record of the call. I don't – who knows what actually happened there.
Right.
But after having told this woman that that's what they need, which actually kind of seems like a pretty reasonable level of requirements.
Yes.
Then Apple changed the game and said, well, no, we need the court order.
And that part's uncool.
And yeah. And I mean, so John's talking about being responsible for yourself and your family. But I think that as quite frankly, more and more people die who are Apple customers, because that will happen. Right? Simply because we have more and more Apple customers, and you know, the as we move up the ranks for people who are tied into technology, Apple's probably and Google and everybody else is going to need some kind of policy in place for this stuff. The court systems in developed countries may well have to also adjust in some way. Like, so for instance, exactly what you said, Jeff, I'm kind of pleased at the idea that it would require a court order, but getting that court order probably needs to be even simpler than we might think we hear who aren't dealing with this.
Sure.
Right. You know, when someone dies, maybe there should be
progressivecourtorders.com.
What?
Progressivecourtorders.com.
Right. So start there should be some kind of automated process for judicial systems, or maybe you know,
I was being facetious.
Yeah, I was ignoring you.
you should.
Anyhow,
this is not a simple solution, and yeah, you know, I think all three of us had a gut reaction about, like, because she wanted to play a game, please, but you know, let's actually remove her specific needs out of this and look at this from a holistic standpoint. This is going to become an ever more serious issue for ever more people, at a very trying time in their lives.
Yeah. So what would have been really nice in this case is if her husband would have had the foresight to make sure that accounts like this that have a unique password were available to his wife before his passing.
Like giving it to your lawyer.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And yeah. So what I have done, because I, you know, I have so many passwords for so many different accounts, I have created a special one-off password that has been given off to the appropriate trusted person, And in the event of my untimely demise, with that password, then they can gain access to other information that they need to be able to take care of my accounts.
Oh, you give one password to your partner and you give one password to your lawyer. You got both of them.
There you go. And they have to work together.
Right. I mean, they could still like collude to like, you know, kill you and take your stuff. But now they
have to take the step of collusion.
Yeah. Exactly. It reduces the instance. I mean, but of course, there are no methods. I mean, I don't know. Do we have any two password encrypted devices? Kickstarter. Here we go. Let's do it.
Here we go. Yeah. So, but in the event.
What'd you call it, John? What's your URL? Progressive what?
Oh, I was thinking of missile launched. Oh, the Minuteman missile systems where you had two officers and each one of them had to insert his own key, remember, and turn them at the same time. Is that what you're talking about? Where you have two different passwords and each person has to? Yeah. Ooh, I don't think such a software exists.
Well, here's a business opportunity. We just dropped it in someone's lap. Listeners, I'm curious. What do you think? Was Apple right to just not simply hand over her husband's password? And what do you think would be a good system for making sure that people that need access to our accounts after we're gone actually can do that? Let me know. You can hit me up on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can leave me comments at the show notes for today's episode. You can also send me an email. That would be observations@macobserver.com. And I'm really curious to know what it is that you think. And we're out of time, guys. So, Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Word up, as the kids say.
That's exactly what they say. John, thank you for being here as well.
You're very welcome.
And listeners, thank you for joining me. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.